Hello, and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week, we bring you stories on all things chemical, from nickel to niacin. In this week's show, we're talking about vitamins. We'll explore the discovery and development of vitamins in the lab, and learn how those vitamins are used by our bodies. That's all coming up on today's episode of Distillations.
Yabba-dabba-doo, yabba-dabba-doo, Flintstone vitamins are good to chew with vitamin A, vitamin B's, vitamin C, and vitamin D.
These days, we are well aware of the importance of vitamins for our daily nutrition and well-being, from the Flintstones chewables we took as kids to the multivitamins and other supplements we take as adults. We take it for granted that vitamins are key to a healthy body. But until the early 20th century, scientists were still unaware of the existence of these vital nutrients. In 1906, English biochemist Sir Frederick Gowland Hopkins discovered that trace substances in certain foods were essential to health. These substances were later named vitamines, with an E, vita for life, and amine for the nitrogen compound thought to be a part of all vitamins. By the time researchers discovered that not all vitamins were amines, the name had already stuck. So they dropped the E to avoid scientific confusion. Ideally, people get the vitamins they need through a balanced diet. But depending on the region or season, some vitamins are harder to come by. Lack of certain vitamins can lead to major health problems. In today's segment, Mystery Solved, we'll look at one dietary deficiency that's making a surprising comeback. CHF's Anke Timmerman has more.
In 1889, a litter of lion cubs at the London Zoo came down with rickets, a disease that had long plagued human toddlers. The cubs' bones were so soft, they bulged under the weight of their bodies, resulting in terrible deformities. The condition was neither hereditary nor contagious, and in people at least, it tended to appear in winter months. Not knowing what to do, the zookeepers treated the cubs with cod liver oil, an old folk remedy. The cubs recovered, and scientists began to wonder what exactly was the secret ingredient in cod liver oil. 33 years later, Johns Hopkins researcher Elmer McCollum isolated the rickets finding compound and labeled it vitamin D, the fourth vitamin discovered and so named for the fourth letter in the alphabet. Mystery solved? Not exactly. Today, nearly 100 years after vitamin D was identified and 75 years after it was first added to commercial milk, the rate of rickets is on the rise again. So what's going on here? Our bodies take in vitamin D in two ways. We can eat it, or we can synthesize it. We naturally produce a precursor of vitamin D, a kind of cholesterol, that's converted to vitamin D3 when exposed to sunlight. But as modern lifestyles have brought us all indoors, and worries about skin cancer have made us cover up with clothing and sunscreen, we're struggling to get enough sunlight to produce the vitamin D we need naturally. We can ingest vitamin D in the form of fatty fish, eggs, and fortified milk, high-fat foods many health-conscious individuals tend to avoid. Since vitamin D is a fat-soluble compound, it is best absorbed by the body in combination with natural fats. It is not clear if the vitamins added to low-fat milk are beneficial if consumed without the necessary fat, not to mention repeated studies showing that children are drinking less and less milk. Complicating matters even more, public health advocates are reluctant to recommend vitamin D supplements because they can be toxic in high doses. So while we all work so hard to lower our risks of heart disease and skin cancer, we may in fact be upping our risk of a disease that should have gone out with the discovery of vitamin D. I'm Anke Timmerman.
Anke Timmerman is a historian at the Chemical Heritage Foundation. For more information and links to past shows, check out our website at distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Vitamins are distinct from carbohydrates, fats, and proteins in structure and function, and many of them, like vitamin B12, have intensely complicated molecular structures. But good health and proper body function also depend on just the right balance of much smaller molecular entities like potassium, calcium, and iron. We'll hear more about one of these elements in today's Element of the Week. CHF's Aaron McCleary has more.
The element iron is essential for respiration. Iron atoms are at the very heart of our red blood cells, which contain millions of molecules of the protein hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is complex. It's made up of four smaller globin proteins, each of which contains a heme molecule. Each heme molecule has an iron atom at its center. It's this iron which gives hemoglobin its ability to capture oxygen and transport it through the body. Oxygen binds very tightly to iron, but hemoglobin can also release oxygen as the position of its globin molecules shift. Because oxygen and iron form a red compound, similar to that which gives rust its red color, oxygenated blood cells are red, while deoxygenated blood cells are blue. Though most of the body's iron is found in red blood cells, some is stored in the liver. But it's possible to have too much of a good thing. A genetic condition called hemochromatosis causes the liver to retain excessively high amounts of iron, which eventually results in liver damage or even failure. The condition can be treated by reducing consumption of vitamin C, which makes the body absorb more iron, increasing consumption of T and calcium, which makes the body absorb less iron, and, although it might seem like a flashback to pre-modern medicine, regular bloodletting. But iron's role in the body isn't limited to the bloodstream. Iron plays an important role in energy regulation, DNA synthesis, cell division, and the immune system, not to mention its role outside the body as the central ingredient in steel. And that's it for Element of the Week. I'm Erin McCleary.
Erin McCleary is curator of exhibits at the Chemical Heritage Foundation. Finally today, have you ever considered how you get your vitamin C when it doesn't come from a fresh squeezed orange? Those chewable vitamins are the product of a complicated chemical process. And at the moment, Chinese manufacturing technology is the most efficient and cost-effective. Jocelyn Ford poked around at the world's largest vitamin C factory.
The way I made the discovery that China dominates the world's vitamin C industry was through a rabbi, Menachem Pekarsky.
Yeah, we're going to a vitamin C factory. It's called actually Weisheng Pharmaceutical.
You see, multinational companies like Coca-Cola buy a lot of vitamin C, and of course they need to be able to say their products are kosher. It's Rabbi Pekarsky's job in China, the world's largest manufacturer of vitamin C, to do the inspections.
What is this?
磷酸二氢钾.
Rabbi Pekarsky is in the storeroom, checking to make sure the ingredients are the same as the ones on his list. The factory campus is the size of several football fields. It takes us 4 hours to visit the buildings that house the production facilities and warehouses. After visiting a room with large vats swishing an orange liquid like a washing machine, we enter a building with a secret ingredient.
Which materials do you have in here? What other materials do they have here?
This is where they keep the microorganism for fermentation. Fermentation is a chemical reaction in which a microorganism or enzyme causes an organic compound to split into simpler substances. And the way China came to dominate the vitamin C market was by coming up with a new two-stage fermentation process. It replaced a more expensive chemical process. I'll get back to that in a minute. Vitamin C was first discovered in 1912, and in 1933 it was isolated in lemons.
Ooh, that's sour.
That's when its chemical structure was first identified.
Vitamin C, or ascorbic acid, molecular formula C6H8O6.
Scientists found a way to make vitamin C using a mixture of fermentation and chemical synthesis.
1937 Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Walter Haworth, for work on identifying and synthesizing ascorbic acid.
They start the process by heating glucose to make sorbitol, a sugar alcohol. Sorbitol is oxidized.
Oxidation, a chemical reaction in which a material gives up electrons, as when the material combines with oxygen.
It's turned into sorbose by fermentation. Then,
after a two-stage chemical process, sorbose is transformed into diacetone ketogalonic acid,
which is turned into powder or crystals. Some of it eventually becomes the chewable tablets we know as vitamin C. That was the way vitamin C used to be made. The problem with this process is it creates toxic waste, which is expensive to get rid of. That's because it requires a large quantity of organic and inorganic solvents and reagents.
Acetone, sulfuric acid, sodium hydroxide.
The Chinese patented a two-step fermentation process, which gets rid of some of the chemical processes. But it still creates a lot of wastewater.
This is the water treatment?
The factory recently invested more than $10 million to improve its wastewater treatment process.
You use the water again, right?
And with a stamp of approval from Rabbi Pekarsky, the factory can still sell its products under a kosher label. For Distillations, I'm Jocelyn Ford in Hebei Province, China.
Jocelyn Ford is a freelance producer. And that's it for today's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation is attributed to playwright George Bernard Shaw. Everything I eat has been proved by some doctor or other to be a deadly poison. And everything I don't eat has been proved to be indispensable for life. But I go marching on. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro. And our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.